Today we're going to discuss a little bit about confidence. And we're going to read a little bit from Bhagavad Gita, if possible. Put your hands up if sometimes you feel you lack confidence. Yeah. Can you say some of the things you feel you lack confidence to do? Yeah.
Sometimes when there are many people and I have to make some announcements.
Yeah. Public speaking is one of the biggest fears in life. They say it's only second to death. After death, people fear public speaking. And you know what the third one they say? Death is the top, public speaking is the next. And you know what the one after that is? Exams. Have exams coming up? Yeah, so many. So public speaking, sometimes to be in front of so many people. Anything else? Where else have you experienced having a lack of confidence? You all put your hand up, so you must. Yes, Emmanuel.
In general, what is the
chakra?
Future bringing, what everything is coming, will I be strong enough to everything that will come in the future?
Okay, yes, will I be strong enough to face what will come in the future? I don't know if I have confidence in myself that I'll be able to face it. Yes. Something else? Yeah?
Express one's own opinion in the face of other opinions.
Yeah, to the confidence to say what you feel, what's going in your heart. Sometimes we may feel others may react in a certain way and therefore we don't feel confident to do that. Yeah, from the Mataji side, all the Matajis are fearless. Yeah. No issues with confidence. Any of the ladies, what do you feel lack of confidence in? Or when you have experienced lack of confidence, what has been the situation? Anyone? Yeah.
Related to that, just having difficult conversations, it's hard.
Yeah, having difficult.
Say something difficult.
Yeah, giving feedback, you don't sometimes feel the confidence, yes? At the back here?
Leading kirtan.
Leading kirtan, yes. Now, when you think about every single one of these situations, what do you think the common thing, the common psychology in every one of these situations is that it challenges your confidence? There's one thing that's common in each one of these things, which means it challenges your confidence. Any idea what it is? Yeah?
Trust.
Trust, yeah?
Have trust in the situation.
Yeah? And why do you need trust? There's one common thing which makes each one of these things fearful and therefore it challenges your confidence. There's a possibility of something.
The lack of faith.
Okay, a lack of faith. Develop it more, yeah?
Being wrong.
Being wrong? Are you going to say something along the same line?
Yeah, that it's not appreciated by the other side.
Okay, getting closer.
Yeah, I was going to say, what would others think of me?
Okay, getting closer.
Being judged.
Closer.
Anxiety to make mistakes.
Even closer. Failure. If you look at all fears or all lack of confidence, it comes because we are meditating on what could go wrong. Therefore, we have confidence issue. Right, when you're public speaking, like, what if I say something wrong? What if I call the Maharaja Prabhu? Prabhu texted me this, I can't believe it, I called you Prabhu. So it's okay, I'm also getting used to it. So when you're public speaking, something may go wrong. If you have to say something to someone, how will they react? Maybe they react in a bad way, relationship is challenged. Worries about the future, challenges. Will I be able to meet the challenge? Will I be able to overcome? With public speaking, someone once said to me something that changed the way I look at it. He said, actually, before anyone goes to do public speaking, there's a certain energy which goes through your system. This is called adrenaline. Now, if you're meditating on what could go wrong, then when you get on the stage, all that adrenaline will transform into nervousness. But while you're going on stage, if you're meditating and getting focusing on what could go right, then when you get on the stage, you'll be excited. Excitement and nervousness is the same thing. It's the same energy. But it's being processed differently according to what we're meditating on. So someone thinks, I am a nervous person. No, you're not. You're a normal person. But all it is that you're meditating on what could go wrong. So therefore, Krishna is revealing something incredible to Arjuna about how you can be confident in every situation, whether it's public speaking, whether it's doing your exams, whether it's even facing death. You can be confident in the face of death. Isn't it? Parikshit was confident in the face of death. He said, today Krishna has come to me in a different form. He was not worried. He had confidence, because he was focused on what will go right, because he was in line with Krishna's plan. So, I'll just give you some. These are some classic signs that you can understand you're a person who lacks confidence. Yeah, I'll give you some classic signs, and you can think about it whether it relates to you in your life. One who lacks confidence seeks validation all the time, whereas someone who's confident is ready to give validation, give compliments, give appreciation. If we're always seeking to be accepted, acknowledged, appreciated, it means there's some lack of confidence within us. If we are defensive, when someone points something out in us, then it indicates a lack of confidence. But when we're very open to feedback, open to correction, open to advice, open to instruction, that is a sign of strong confidence. Yeah. If one is always trying to stay in their comfort zone, that's a sign of low confidence. Could be. But if one is ready to take risks, if one is ready to venture out of the known, if one is ready to go and explore something beyond what they know, if one is ready to embrace change, put your hand up if you don't like change. Like me, for me, the last 2 weeks have been, you know, it's a little bit of a change, you know, change of life. It's like, for me, it's like, for my personality, change, very difficult. Are you someone who's always procrastinating? Can be a sign of low confidence. Decisiveness, ability to just take a path and walk it. This is a sign of confidence. Blame others. When isn't it, they say, when you point one finger at someone, there's three pointing at you. When we try to blame others, it's a sign of low confidence. But when we take responsibility, that's a sign of confidence. Anyway, there could be many like this. It's interesting. Practically most people in this world have an issue of low confidence, even devotees of Krishna. But you'll understand why low confidence is actually why it occurs and how to overcome it. And then it will become clear to you why so many people have an issue with low confidence. This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna, chapter number 11, entitled The Universal Form. We're reading from text number 33. Arjuna is like up and down. He's not sure. Let's say he's lacking confidence. Should he do it? Should he not? If you thought public speaking was bad, Arjuna had to face 640 million warriors on the battlefield, and he was the one who was the star player. Everything was resting on him, and he was not sure. I mean, you could forgive him for having a bit of doubts. I mean, it's a big responsibility after all. So Arjuna was having some issue in confidence. So Krishna's job was to give him confidence. So Krishna did different things, he spoke many things. But you know, sometimes you can speak, but some people learn by hearing, some people learn by seeing, isn't it? Some people are audio learners, some people are visual learners. Make sense? I do an experiment with you to help you understand whether you're audio learner or visual learner. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. If the answer is yes, you have to say yes, but you have to nod, go like this. And if the answer is no, you have to say no, but you have to go like this. Make sense? Ready? Are you a man?
Yes.
We need the movements at the same time.
Yes.
No. Yeah. Okay, we'll try again, yeah? You got the point, right? Do you live in Zurich?
Yes.
Okay. Good, that's very good. Are you happy in your life?
Yes.
Are you married? No. If you do it properly. Are you married?
It's actually a difficult question.
Okay, it's a difficult question. Okay, we'll skip that one. Would you like to live in Vrindavan for the rest of your life?
Yes.
So does that mean you're not happy in Zurich?
It's an open question.
Anyway, we could go on. If I was better, I'd do it quicker. But you can basically see if someone's like, the right answer is by their head movements, they tend to be a more visual learner. Whereas if their right answer is what they say. Anyway, there's a better way to do it. I'm not so much a psychologist. Anyway, that's not what Krishna's talking about here. Krishna has given the knowledge to Arjuna in an audio way. He's given all the philosophy. But now, in the 11th chapter, Krishna gives a visual. So what does Krishna do in the 11th chapter of the Gita? He shows his universal form. Because Krishna was telling Arjuna, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate. Everything comes from me, all material, spiritual worlds, everything rests in me. All living beings have their origin in me. That was in chapter 10. But now Krishna in chapter 11 shows Arjuna practically, yes, just in case you thought I was making it up. Here it is, the universal form. Arjuna sees everything in the universal form. Right? Is it? You just for a minute imagine what it would be like to see the universal form. Arjuna sees all the warriors on the battlefield. He sees everything in the earth planet, all the mountains, the rivers, the vegetation. He sees the higher planetary systems, the lower planetary systems. He even sees the battlefield. Imagine now looking into a universal form and seeing yourself in the universal form into the future, what's happening. That's amazing. And then what does Arjuna see? He sees that all the warriors are entering into Krishna's mouth. All the warriors are going to die. Everything is decided. And then what does Krishna say to Arjuna? Tasmatvam atishta yasho labhashva jitva shantrun bhungshvarajyam samriddham maye vitane hatapurvameva nimitamatram bhavasavyasachin. Krishna looks at Arjuna and he says, therefore get up, prepare to fight and win glory, conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight. So basically, Krishna is saying to Arjuna that I decided everything. Everything is already going on by my plan. whether you decide to fight or not fight, the outcome of this battle is already predetermined. Now the question is, do you want to become an instrument in Krishna's plan? So this is what Prabhupada writes in the purport. Savyasachin refers to one who can shoot arrows very expertly in the field. Thus Arjuna is addressed as an expert warrior capable of delivering arrows to kill his enemies. Just become an instrument, nimitta matram. The word is also very significant. The whole world is moving according to the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's an important line. The whole world is moving according to the plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Foolish persons who do not have sufficient knowledge think that nature is moving without a plan and all manifestations are but accidental formations. There are so-called scientists who suggest that perhaps it was like this or maybe like that, but there is no question of perhaps and maybe. There is a specific plan being carried out in this material world. What is this plan? The cosmic manifestation is a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead, back to home. As long as they have the domineering mentality which makes them try to lord it over material nature, they are conditioned. But anyone who can understand the plan of the Supreme Lord and cultivate Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. The creation and destruction of the cosmic manifestation are under the superior guidance of God. Thus the battle of Kurukshetra was fought according to the plan of God. Arjuna was refusing to fight, but he was told that he should fight in accordance with the desire of the Supreme Lord. Then he would be happy. If one is in full Krishna consciousness and his life is devoted to the Lord's transcendental service, he is perfect. In this material world, the way in which people try to become confident is that the world tells you have confidence in your abilities, isn't it? Like in the material world, they have affirmations. Yeah. Did anyone ever do affirmations? I will get well. I will get well. I will get well. I will get well. Now, it's not that such things are not useful, but such things in and of themselves don't guarantee anything. In the material world, we try to build up our confidence by a mental adjustment, by an intellectual arrangement, or by some kind of inflation of our own self-potential. But such confidence is neither substantial nor sustainable. Like Muhammad Ali said, I am the greatest. Right? But eventually even Muhammad Ali broke down. Right? His health went. In the material world, they say build confidence by believing in yourself. But in Krishna consciousness, we build confidence by believing in Krishna. Now you may say, that's obvious, that's like Krishna consciousness 101. But I tell you, this is a powerful principle. The moment that you understand that this is not philosophy you've not heard before, it is philosophy, but I'm repeating it now because we need to deeply meditate on this point. The moment that we understand, I am simply an instrument, I simply have to do my duty, I simply have to act according to Guru, the spiritual teachers, Shastra, the injunctions of the scripture, and sadhus, the guidance of spiritual friends and saintly people. If I do that, and if I do my part with all sincerity, Krishna is backing me up at every step of the way. There's no way I can go wrong. There's no way I can fail. There's no way that it won't work out according to how it's working out. Because Krishna says, I'm behind everything. My hand is behind everything. This world has a specific plan, and the moment in which you align yourself with my plan and become an instrument, you have nothing to worry about. Now that's simple philosophy, but who can live it? Arjun became convinced, and therefore he had no anxiety whatsoever. What did he say to Krishna? Nasto moha smriti labdva tvat prasadat mayachuta stitosmi gata sandeha karishe vachanam tava. He says, my illusion is gone. I've regained all my memory. I have no more doubts. Imagine living life free of any doubt. Imagine living life free of any fear. Imagine living life free of any inhibition. That can come when you understand Krishna has a specific plan, that he's working, he's the master of all mystics, and my only duty is to somehow align myself with Krishna's plan. You see, there are two basic mentalities in this world. One is that I'm in control, and the other one is that if Krishna is in control. So now let me show you, or let me ask you. Okay, so imagine. One side, I'm in control. That's one's mentality. Another side, Krishna is in control. That's their mentality. Say, for example, you experience success in your life, and your basic philosophy is, I'm in control. What will happen within you?
We'll increase ego.
You will increase your ego. You'll become proud. You may even become complacent. Now, in success, if you know Krishna is in control, what will then happen within your...
Gratitude.
Humility. Faith. Okay, let's imagine there's failure in your life. If your basic concept is I'm in control, then what will you feel when you fail?
Disappointed,
depressed, dejected, inferiority complex, I'm useless. If you fail, but you understand Krishna's in control, what will you then feel within yourself?
Something big is yet to come.
Optimism, yeah. No, yeah, definitely.
Acceptance,
optimism, a sense of future, a sense that I tried my best, but I got to keep on trying because Krishna wants something else at this point. Imagine in your life you have to face a challenge. There's a challenging situation. If your basic mentality is I'm in control, then what will happen within you when you face a challenge?
Overconfident.
Maybe the other way around, no? When you face a challenge and it's very difficult, or it seems very intimidating, and you think, I'm the one who has to overcome this.
Impossible.
You'll feel impossible, you'll feel nervous, you'll feel inadequate, you'll feel overwhelmed, you'll feel...
Stressed,
loneliness, so many things. But when you have to face something very, very difficult, but you know Krishna's in control, then the opposite happens, right? You feel, yes, it's possible, anything's possible. Therefore, how did Prabhupada come? How did Prabhupada... Once they were walking past Victoria Memorial in Calcutta, and Prabhupada pointed and he said, when I was a young boy, I climbed right to the top. So one devotee said, Prabhupada, you must have been very brave when you were a child. Prabhupada said, I was brave then, and I was brave now. Otherwise, how could I have come to your country all alone, with no help, with no money, with no plan? Because Prabhupada knew Krishna is in control. Therefore, Prabhupada could do the most outrageous thing. Imagine you had two heart attacks on a ship. I mean, the first thing you're going to do when you come off the ship is get yourself down to a hospital and get it checked out, right? Not Prabhupada. Not Srila Prabhupada. He just came off the ship and just went about his business. Because he said, I'm a puppet in your hands, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance as you wish. Just see, if you can be in this consciousness that Krishna is in control of everything, your life can become a transcendental drama. Because then what happens is that you're not resisting Krishna's plan. You're working with Krishna's plan. And Krishna's plan is always the most exciting plan. And so the art of confidence is that somehow or other we have to develop that confidence that Krishna is controlling everything. But now for me to sit here and just say, yes, Krishna is in control. Why are you guys all worrying? Krishna is in control. Just go with Krishna's plan. Is it easy? You know, the resident, Vrindavan is known as Vraja, isn't it? Vraja, V-R-A-J-A, Vraja. You know what Vraja means etymologically? Vraja means to move. So you know why the residents of Vrindavan are known as Vrajabasis? One of the commentators gives the purport. He says, because they are always moving with Krishna's plan. Krishna's plan is always changing. And sometimes we wake up in the morning and we look at Krishna's plan and we say, Krishna, that plan is not a good plan. Are you serious? Like that plan? I don't want to move with that plan. You need to go back to the drawing board, make a new plan. I'm not going to go with that plan. Vrajabasis are ready to move with Krishna's plan. If Krishna wants to go this way, we'll go that way. If Krishna wants to run with the cows this way, we'll go. If Krishna wants this today, we'll have this, no problem. So who can move with Krishna's plan? It's not so easy. So now I have to give you something else. Because if I just say the art of confidence is believe in Krishna, okay, class done, boom, let's all go. I don't think it's going to be effective, maybe. So there are some other ways in which you can develop confidence. I'll share a few thoughts with you and then I'm going to open it up for questions and answers. The first thing, if you want to develop confidence in this point that everything is happening under Krishna's control and I simply have to be an instrument, you know, one way to develop that faith in that philosophy is become very reflective about your own life. Look back in your own life. Reflect on everything that's happened in your own life. And if you're very, very tuned in and you're very honest, and you're very introspective in how you assess the history of your own life, then you will actually be able to see how at every step Krishna's hand was there. Krishna was moving things in a certain way. Krishna's presence was very, very clear. His influence was very, very real in my own life. They say you have to live life going forwards, but you can only understand life looking backwards. So sometimes the way we get faith in Krishna's presence in our life, even when we're doubting it in the moment, is if we're introspective and we look back at our life, then we can get faith. Oh no, Krishna was there. That time in my life which was so difficult, which was so challenging, that time in my life which, you know, I just wanted to get rid of that chapter of my life, now I see it was so important for me. So one way in which we can get the confidence in this philosophy of having confidence in Krishna is by reflecting and looking back in your own life and seeing Krishna's presence. Another way that you can get confidence in this philosophy and get confidence in relying on Krishna is through people who have confidence in Krishna. You see, we have a lot of potential that we don't know about, but when someone has confidence in Krishna and they come and whisper in your ear and they say, you know what, you can do it. that gives you the confidence where you lack the confidence, isn't it? Hanuman never knew he could jump from Lanka, India to Lanka. But the moment someone told him, no, no, you can do it. You have the potential within you. He went. Arjuna never knew he had the potential to fight on the battlefield in that way. But Krishna reminded him. Maybe Prabhupada, he didn't know, maybe we don't know, but maybe he didn't know that he had the potential to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. But when his spiritual master in 1922 met him for the first time and said, you're young, you're intelligent, why don't you spread Krishna consciousness all? Maybe it just required those few words from someone who has deep faith to then instill that faith in you. Know that there can be no greater gift in your life than having someone in your life who has more faith in you than you have in yourself. If you have someone in your life who has more faith in you than you have in yourself, your life will become incredible. They say the duty of a spiritual master is to give the disciple a vision of their life that is much greater, far greater than they could have come up with by themselves. So whether that's Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru or whatever kind of gurus we have, they broaden our horizons. So this is another way in which we can develop confidence if we feel we lack this confidence. You know, another way to develop confidence in the fact that everything is going on Krishna's plan and Krishna's hand is always there? You know another way? Take a risk. Take a risk. Christopher Columbus, he said, you can only ever find out what's on the horizon if you're ready to leave the shore. So sometimes what you have to do is, if you want to develop belief in Krishna, belief in Krishna's protection, belief that everything will go according to Krishna, you have to just take a risk. You have to take a leap of faith. And in that, if you look at every great saint in our tradition, practically all of them took a risk. They all took a risk. Prahlad, he took a risk, right? Like, where's your Vishnu? Is he here? I mean, all of us would say, like, yeah, it's okay, he's not around, like, just give me a break, you know, like, there's no need to be, you know, like, we've got to be practical as well, yeah? Like, that is our philosophy, that Vishnu is everywhere, but when someone's breathing down your neck in that way, like, you might just say, like, okay, yeah, it's alright, if that's what you want to believe. No, not Prahlad. He took a risk. We said, yeah, well, no, yeah, he's everywhere. He's there as well. And then the Lord came. Dhruva took a risk. I mean, he didn't have to go. He didn't have to go to the forest. In fact, everyone was trying to convince him not to do it, including Narad Muni. But he did it. He went to Madhuvan, Dhruvatil. You can go to that place today for 6 months, increasing in his austerity. You think we think of a forest, you know, like in the pictures sometimes it looks nice. You think, like, yeah, I'd like to go there to the forest. It looks like quite a nice place, you know. Sometimes when you hear of these sages going to the forest, to us it sounds like an easy thing. I mean, it's really not an easy thing, like, to live in the forest, yeah. It's but they took a risk, and then Krishna came. So, are you ready to take a risk? We have to take be ready to take a risk. And then Krishna will appear in our life. If you're not ready to fall back, sometimes we do that experiment, two people like stand one in front of the other looking in the same direction, and then we tell the person in front, okay, now the guy's behind you, don't worry, he'll catch you, and you just have to fall back. Everyone else in that audience is like, yeah, just do it, what's the problem, he's there, you know. But if you're that person who has to fall back, not so easy. So are you ready? Are we ready to fall back and let Krishna, feel Krishna's embrace? If you're not going to fall back, you won't feel Krishna's embrace unless you're ready to let go of your conceptions of what you think you can and can't do. You won't feel Krishna. So sometimes that confidence in Krishna comes by making a confident choice to try and experience Krishna. You become fearless by facing your fears and just doing it. And that is a strand within our Vaishnava teachings. I'll tell you one other final way you can become fearless and full of confidence. You want to know?
Yes.
I don't know if you want to know this one. Death. Just think about death. All the great saints, all the great sages, all the great thoughtful transcendentalists were regularly meditating on death. Because you know what? When you meditate on death, when you realize at one point it's all over, at one point it all just disappears into the ether, at one point it comes to an end. It kind of helps to put life in perspective. It kind of helps you to frame a lot of the things, your inhibitions and your worries and your things that block your confidence. And so all the great, isn't even Steve Jobs used to say that, right? To quote one of the acharyas of our times. That every day when I wake up, I ask myself, if today was my final day, would I be doing what I'm doing today? And when the answer is no for too many days in a row, then I know I need to change something. He said, death is life's greatest change agent. If you want to have confidence in doing something, however difficult it is, a lot of that confidence in doing something, no matter how difficult it is when you see it on the backdrop of death, when you realize ultimately everything all ends anyway. So why not give it a try? So in this way, Krishna consciousness actually empowers one to have the deepest confidence in their life. This is not confidence which is based on a pride, or confidence which is based on ego, or confidence which is based on inflating your own sense of who you are. No, this is confidence based on Krishna. Krishna confidence. Quietly confident. Confidence with humility. Confidence which is built upon dependence in Krishna, and confidence in knowing that if I move with Krishna's plan, I'll always be protected. Whatever the result is the best, and the result is not what determines success. The result is my own inner resolve to be in line with Krishna's plan. That is the success. Prabhupada came to America and he said in his prayer, make me a success or failure as you wish. That's an amazing prayer. Are you ready to go in front of Krishna and say, Krishna, make me a success or failure? I have no attachment. I'm completely happy to be a failure for you, Krishna. But Prabhupada understood that success or failure, it doesn't matter, because the real success goes beyond that so-called success and failure. The real success is that I was moving with Krishna's plan. And therefore, externally, success or failure, that's Krishna's job. My task is only to be an instrument. Nimitta matram bhavasavya sachin. And so if you ultimately want to have the deepest confidence in life, and Prabhupada is the ideal example, because Prabhupada did something that required a level of confidence that is just off the scale. I mean, you have to have an incredible level of confidence to step on a ship at 70 years old with 40 rupees and go to a place you've never been to before, knowing no one, and having bad health and being totally okay with that. I mean, you need to, you know, when the manor was closing down, then we had to employ, like, you know, these lawyers, the barristers, you know, they have these wigs, you may have seen the English ones. I mean, they're super intelligent. So we employed the best ones to keep the manor open because they wanted to close the temple down. So anyway, he came in. Shivram Maharaj was the GBC at that time. He was younger. This was in the 90s. So he said, well, look, I'm defending you guys. So I need to know something about your philosophy. So can you give me some books? I mean, that's like a dream. Can you give me some books? Yes, take all the books. So they gave him all the books and they gave him Prabhupada's life story. And yeah, these guys are geniuses. You know what they do is they speed read like this. Because these barristers have to read so many books, case law and all this. So he sped read all the books. So he came back after a few weeks, he said, I read it all. It's good philosophy. He goes, but he was speaking to Shivram Swami, but he said, but this guy, this man, he's amazing. So Shivram Swami said, yeah, I know. That's why we joined this movement. He goes, no, you don't know. So he said, no. Shivram Swami said, he goes, no, we know. Of course we know he's amazing. We've also read the same books that we just gave you. We know his life. He goes, no, you don't know. You have no idea how amazing this man is. He said, why? He said, you're 30 years old. Or 40, whatever, Shivram Swami. He said, I'm 70 years old. I know what it means to be 70 years old. You have no idea. You have no idea what it means to be in a 70-year-old person's body. And to do what this man has done at the age of 70 is truly remarkable. See, okay, you win. So he was completely astounded. But that's the confidence someone can have. Otherwise, who would have confidence at 70? It's amazing. So the level of confidence that one can generate in their life if they truly understand the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita means you can actually do miraculous things because you can actually enter into the transcendental drama of Krishna. But you have to understand this point very, very strongly. Nimitta matram bhavasavya sachin. Krishna says, it's all going on in my plan. You just have to become an instrument. And if we understand that deeply, life becomes amazing. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, those were some thoughts on confidence. I don't know if anyone has any question or comment or doubt. Is that Nanda Kumar Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. It's such a wonderful topic. I found myself in a challenging mindset
challenge.
Today.
Yeah,
please
challenge.
Please forgive me. It's something, a few things, and maybe we can just, I guess I'm carving out myself a little place here. There's a term which is called self-efficacy. Mm-hmm. It's when you fail numerous of times and you kind of lose this. You think you cannot do it. You know, you did it once, you did it twice, you did it thrice, and you are like, it's not going to work. So, given that the devotee is a devotee, but given a circumstance, maybe he doesn't have all the ingredients for a support. Let's say, doesn't have a Shiksha Guru. Or let's say, and on top of it, his instructing spiritual master is not available. Somehow he lives in a certain place and like that. And then he wants to follow Krishna's plan, but he doesn't have enough strength, and he knows he's doing something what he should not be doing. You know, I don't know, breaking principle or two or whatever like that. And then he tries to understand the plan. He tries to do it. He gets up, but he falls. He gets up, feels all this. So basically, quite damaging for the self-confidence. And you mentioned many wonderful points, I think, I very much appreciated that last bit of six, right? Yeah. And also, Arjuna was on a battlefield. You know, when you see Krishna in front of you, when you see a universal form, well, yeah, I want to be an instrument. It's, you know, there's a lot of direct experience right there. But when you feel out of the boat, mm-hmm. when you feel you're not up to the standard, you're trying your best.
Yeah. Let me just interject here, and yeah, then you can come back.
That was all the all the tomatoes I mustered to throw.
Okay. let me see. I'll try and shoot around like some of those tomatoes back to you. if I miss, then you can let me know. What I'm picking up from you is that if someone has repeated failures, then it seems to like damage your ability to put confidence into Krishna. Yeah, so repeated failure is almost reducing our capacity.
I would say more in the self.
In the self, yeah. Yeah. That's why the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita is so important, because often our main problem is that we define failure in the wrong way. Our definition of failure and also our definition of success are the wrong definitions. And therefore, we fall prey to both things. Someone in their life may think they're successful, but because their definition is wrong, they have no idea. They think they're on cloud nine thinking they're successful, but actually they're a complete failure. And it can also work the other way, that someone externally seems to be failing, but internally. The real definition of failure and success is what's going on in your internal life. Right? It's not based on result. So this kind of concept of detached action that Krishna gives, which is actually, if you look at Western philosophy and how they've picked up the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the main topic, like as bhaktas, the main topic we take from the Gita is surrender to Krishna, love for Krishna. But you know, Western philosophers and people who look at the Gita, you know, the main teaching that they take from the Gita, which for them is like mind-blowing, is the concept of karma yoga, the concept of detached action. The concept that you do your duty, you're not in control of the result, and whether it's so-called failure or success, the deeper success is that internally you did it with the right intention, and therefore internally you're growing no matter what the external result is. This for Western philosophers was like mind-blowing. The concept of, you know, karmanyevadikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana, that do your duty but don't be attached to the result. So one of the main things is that our definition of what is failure and success is wrong. It's amazing how Krishna works. Krishna, like I grew up in London in a place called Wembley. And in Wembley, in the late 70s, the devotees did a big program. And they, there's a big hall, you know what it's like, you, thousands of posters and all that stuff. Anyway, it came to the night of the program, and it was like empty, like literally empty. finally like three people kind of walked in, you know. It's like this huge hall and three people were in the audience. I said, anyway, what to do? Do the program anyway. Ma faleshu kadachana. We're not in control of the result. They did that program, right? And you know who those three devotees, those three people, they ended up becoming? Atmanivedan Swami, Sannyasi, still at the manor, 45 years later. Shri Dharma Prabhu, who served 45 years at the manor and was temple president. And Pranabandhu Prabhu, who served 45 years at the manor and is still there. What's success and what's failure? We have no idea. Prabhupada had organized an evening program, nobody came. So Prabhupada thought, let me give a lecture anyway. And Prabhupada thought, let me just tape record it. So he tape recorded it, gave a lecture to four walls. No one came. And you know what that lecture became, right? The introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. How many people hear that lecture now?
That introduction made me a devotee, actually. I never heard this before.
I heard that story. I've never read it, but I've heard that story. But even if it was not the introduction, even if it would be, so many books were made like that. So we don't know. We don't know how we tend to define failure and success in certain ways that become very demoralizing. And with the philosophy of the Gita, if we get that, you know, we make that connection with Krishna, and remember I said there are other ways in which we can develop this confidence in Krishna, then we begin to begin defining it in a different way. Some thoughts?
Yeah, they're nice organic tomatoes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good point, especially if a person has this, somehow this concept, not concept, but this conditioning of perfectionism, that, you know, only if you do things right, then it counts. And if you don't, then, you know, you did one thing too little and then it's all discounted. Then it's... In Krishna consciousness, because it's so, it's just unlimitedly, you can evolve and evolve and evolve. You can always, you know, become more pure and more nicer. So it's actually never, you're never good enough in one, if you look from the perfectionist point of view. So, yeah, having this notion that that's not what Krishna is looking for. Is looking for your honest effort of your heart.
Yeah. It seems as though Krishna arranged Srila Prabhupada's life in such a way so that there could be no excuse for any of us to become demoralized. Like if someone says, I'm demoralized because my health is not good, therefore I can't... Well, sorry, Prabhupada had two heart attacks. So like, I'm demoralized because I don't have good association. Well, Prabhupada came alone. Well, I'm demoralized because, you know, I don't find I can connect to the devotees around me. Well, Prabhupada was coming from Calcutta to the Lower East Side. I mean, if there was such a thing as culture shock... That was the one. Well, I'm demoralized because, I'm old. I don't have the capacity. Well, Prabhupada was 70 years old. So it seems as though if we could have any, Prabhupada's life just removes every excuse to be demoralized because Prabhupada faced it all and he never let any of it affect his confidence. Because that essential confidence was there, that confidence in Krishna. So yeah. Yes, Mataji at the back. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the lecture. And my question is, like, as you said, we should follow Krishna's path. But in the battlefield, Krishna was there to show Arjun that, okay, this is the path I have chosen for you. You should fight. It was quite clear. And then Krishna left it to Arjun that whether you fight or not, it's up to you. But in our lives, as devotees, let's say, if we get up in the morning, how are we going to know that which is the path which Krishna has chosen for us and which is the path which our mind has chosen?
Okay, so yeah, you're saying Krishna was right there in front of Arjuna and he was telling him, so it was very clear. There was a direct, clear correlation there. But how do we know for us? We're not seeing Krishna, therefore how do we know that this is the path that Krishna has chosen for us? Of course, Krishna is still speaking to us in different ways. Krishna is speaking to us through the Gita. Krishna is speaking to us through the Vaishnavas. Krishna can even speak to you through those who are not devotees, because Krishna is also within their heart. But then you may say, yeah, that's all nice, but then we filter it all through our own mind, so we may just hear what we want to hear. So that's definitely there. But in Krishna consciousness, there's no replacement for sincerity. So that if you've read the books, you've heard what the Vaishnavas say, and you kept your eyes, ears and heart open, and you pray to Krishna, and you sincerely come to a conclusion that I think this is what Krishna wants me to do based on all of these things, I can never be 100% sure, because maybe I'm... It doesn't matter. If you're sincere, that is Krishna's plan, and Krishna will always protect it. So sometimes people say, I don't know what decision Krishna wants me to make. Should I do this or should I do that? One man went to an astrologer and he said, there's two ladies and I don't know which one I should marry. Which one will be the lucky one? So the astrologer looked into the ball and he said, you'll marry the first one. The second one will be the lucky one. We got all these decisions we have to make, and then we think, like, does Krishna want me to do this, or does Krishna want me to do this? It's not actually about making the right decision. You know what it is? It's about going through the right process in making that decision. In other words, if you go guru, sadhu, shastra, prayer, sincerity, and then you choose A, it doesn't matter if A or B is the right, because you've gone through the right process, Krishna will protect you. So Krishna says, Majjita sarva durgani matprasadat tarishyashi atatattam ahankara nasrosyasi vinangshashi. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditional life by my grace. But if you act not hearing me, you will be lost. If we're honest, most of the time it's not a dilemma, like, does Krishna really want me to do this or does Krishna really want me to do this? If we're honest, most of the time it's just like, Krishna probably wants me to do this, but I don't really want to do this. So like, yeah, are you sure, Krishna, you want me to do it? Most of the time, if we're honest, think about most of the challenges we have. It's 5 o'clock. Does Krishna really want me to get up? It's a dilemma. Krishna, appear before me and confirm that you actually want me to get up. I'm ready, but if you appear before me, I'll do it. I mean, come on. It's... How many times are we really in a dilemma, if we're honest? We basically know what Krishna wants us to do, but we don't want to do it. We're dragging our feet. So, then Krishna says, what can I do? Yata iccha tata guru. Now I've given you the knowledge, you do what you want to do. So Krishna equipped everyone. It's up to us.
Thank you, Maharaj.
And the fact of the matter is, so many people saw the universal form, not only Arjuna. So many people saw Krishna. Dhritarashtra also heard Krishna in front of him. But did Dhritarashtra listen? No, but Krishna, he come in front of you, how can you not listen? But it doesn't matter, because it's not about Krishna being in front of you or not. It's what is the willingness within your heart. If there's no willingness in the heart, Krishna may be in front of you, still you won't follow. And if the willingness is in your heart, still Krishna may not be fit. You will hear Krishna. Hare Krishna. Anyone else? Yes.
Namaskar, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much for this very inspiring
and very wonderful talks. I am just a very simple student of PhD in science and technology, and I have not any knowledge in Krishna. So I ask you this very simple question. From today's talk, if I have understood you well, that God's plan and our plan, or how do we perceive a normal plan as God's plan or our plan, and if we surrender or take it as God's plan, then God has a plan for welfare and not for destruction. He has a plan to help us and not to harm us.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, how do we cope with the loss of a loved one? How do we say that God is still good when I have the loss of a child, or maybe a destruction, a huge destruction in the family, or where? How will you go on with it, and how can you still say that I surrender, I am without anxiety or stress?
Yes, so you have raised the question in which, to answer this question, a whole department of theology has opened up. This is known as theodicy. Theodicy means the study of how to understand that God is compassionate, God is all-knowing, God is all-powerful, and yet there is suffering in the world. In other words, why do bad things happen to good people? So to answer this question, there's a whole study. And basically you're asking that if God's plan, Krishna's plan is there and it's an all good plan, what about when we see that plan and it doesn't look very nice and it doesn't look very good? Of course, the Bhagavad Gita is giving us two very, very important concepts, karma and reincarnation. Karma means that what we're going through is based upon activities which were conducted in not just this life but many lives previous to this life. And reincarnation means that, of course, we're living multiple lives. So basically, when you try to understand suffering and God's plan, it becomes very confusing, because all you're able to see is one chapter of the story. Imagine someone picked up the Bhagavad Gita and they decided to just start in chapter number 6 and finish at the end of chapter number 6. Do you think they'd be able to understand the whole Gita? No, because you need to understand what Krishna said before and what Krishna says at the end. Then you'll understand the book. So when you look at what happens in this life, necessarily it will be confusing, because you're only looking at one chapter of the story. You see? So I give you a formula. If you want to understand the depth of God's love, you have to understand the length and the breadth of our existence. Okay? I'll repeat what I mean by that. If you want to understand the depth of God's love, the first thing you have to understand is the length of our existence. When Krishna is dealing with us, he's dealing with us over many lifetimes. It's not that it just begins and ends with this life, or someone was born and then they died. So terrible. But we don't understand. There's something before that, there'll be something after that. So the first thing you have to understand is the length of our existence, and the second thing is you have to understand the breadth of our existence. We measure good and bad things based on what happens to the physical body and the mind. But Krishna says, beyond the body and mind, you are the soul. And the soul is never scarred. The soul can never be cut by wind, cut by weapons, withered by the wind, made wet by water. The soul is indestructible. Even when someone's physical and emotional body goes through a lot of pain, the soul is always protected by Krishna. So when we understand the length of our existence, many lives, and when we understand the breadth of our existence, I'm a body and a mind but a soul as well, then we can understand, oh, the depth of Krishna's love. He's not just dealing with me. Does that make sense? So it's still difficult. Who doesn't feel pain if they see someone die or war going on in the world? We feel the pain. We feel no one should go through this and no one should go through that. Yet we must understand that yet there is a plan behind it. And we may not understand that plan. Yet there is a plan. You can respond to that if you like.
I will have to increase my knowledge in the faith.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much. You tried to explain it.
Yes.
In a very simple way that I can understand. Thank
yeah.
you.
Suffering must be understood, that whatever suffering we're going through is based on a longer story than what we're just seeing now. If we just try to see, if you go into a film, imagine you sneak into a film, not that you would do that, and you see one scene in the middle of the film and someone's getting beaten up. Obviously it's not going to make sense. Because you don't know what happened before that, what's going to happen after that. So you don't know. We're just looking at people's lives and we're just seeing one scene. But this is just one life, one chapter, one scene of a longer story. So you can't, it's very difficult to decipher.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maharaj. You were mentioning how, yeah, we change is difficult and confidence in these times is trying. But if possible, I would like to hear from you how you experienced this path, you know, next step of yours of taking up sannyas ashram. Like how you gained the confidence to take this step. And also I would like to hear more about the role of the spiritual master of guru in this step, but in general in confidence in Krishna consciousness, how they're related, and if possible, if you can share how it related to your taking sannyas.
Yeah, actually, the idea to talk about this evening actually came from that, because someone asked me like. Okay, so some of you may hear, may not be aware, but at some point in someone's life, they may take a vow of sannyas. Some of you may or may not be familiar. So sannyas is said to be the final vow. After this, there are no more vows. So sannyas is the vow where you then dedicate your mind, body and words. See, give me a danda. Is my danda there? Can you just give it to me? I can show. So some may not be aware. Anyone who touches a danda ends up taking sannyas. Sorry, too late. So when you take sannyas, you carry one of these. So this is called a danda. And in here there are four sticks. So one stick is shorter. So three sticks represent the body, mind and words. And the shorter stick represents the jiva or the soul. So when one takes sannyas, then one tries to take the vow that for the rest of my life, I'll try to dedicate my mind, body and words to serving Krishna. And on the top, you can see there's a hook. You can't see it properly because it's covered, but there's a hook there, and that hook is meant to symbolize the duty of a sannyasi is to go around the world and travel from place to place and attack all the philosophies that don't bring people happiness, like philosophy of materialism, philosophy of selfishness, all of that. You're supposed to expose these philosophies as not good ways to live and establish the best way to live. So it's a serious vow. All of us take vows. Some devotees in here have taken vows of initiation. Some of you have taken vows of marriage. Some of you have taken vows of not eating chocolate. These are all serious vows, you know. So I don't think it's only me who has had confidence to make a vow. All of you have made a vow. Someone makes a vow to get married. That's a very that's as brave as taking sannyas in its own way, isn't it? Every vow has its challenges, right? And so someone asked me that question. What gave you the confidence to take, you know, this vow? And that's when I came up with these points. That I reflected back on my life and I felt, yeah, Krishna was moving everything in a certain way at a certain point, and this step towards taking this life also happened without me necessarily trying to coerce it in that way. So I have faith that the flow of Krishna's plan has moved in my life in that way, and so it continues to move in that life. I got faith and confidence because of mentors, because people who knew me, because people who have seen me all said that this would be the right thing to do. Before I took this step, I emailed like 25, maybe not 25, maybe 20 senior devotees who I feel know me. And my thing was that if one of them would say, then I would seriously. But somehow or other, everyone was encouraging. So then that gave confidence. And then I realized, ultimately, everything is a risk. If you don't take sannyas, it's a risk. If you take sannyas, it's a risk. See, people only see that taking sannyas is a risk. I tell them not taking sannyas is a risk. Isn't it? It's also a risk. Right? Imagine you're in a quicksand. Has anyone ever been in quicksand? Like you stand and you're in quicksand. You think like, oh my God, I'm in quicksand. And then you look north and you say, I don't want to go, I could get out that way, but I don't want to go that way because there are some criminals there. So I'm not going to go there. Look back and you say, I can't go back there because there's a cliff and I might, you know, I can't go back that way. And you look left and you think, but that way there's a desert and there's not going to be anything to eat. And that way I can't go because there are some animals there that might attack me. So I'll just do the safe thing. Obviously, I'll just do the safe thing and I'll just stay where I am. Well, my friend, well, that's not very safe. Because that way you're definitely going to die. So what's a risk? Everything's a risk. We always think doing something is a risk. Have you considered that not doing something is an equal risk? I'm not putting doubt in you, but... So these points I reflected on a lot. But obviously nothing should be done whimsically, everything should be done with preparation. And of course someone doesn't make this step overnight, it's over many years. And it's done with many blessings, and then ultimately we're very weak. And so we realize, I did it with the best confidence, but I'm still reliant. I still have to always be reliant. And like that. So we have to be confident. We have to be confident. And these are the things that give me confidence. I don't know if that's out. Yeah, so basically that was the reason.
Right.
I'll just hold it. I'll just, yeah, you can put it back.
And then maybe if you can speak about how this relates to the spiritual master, like in your situation, but in general, confidence in the spiritual master, in being confident oneself, how is this related, or how does it influence your confidence if you have this connection to the spiritual master?
Yes, of course, if someone has a Vaishnava in their life, you see, Rupa Goswami says you have to find a Vaishnava who is Sajatiya, Snehasya, and Ashraya. If you find a spiritual master who's Sajatiya, he understands you, he's like-minded. Snehasya means he's affectionate, your well-wisher. And Ashraya means he has enough spiritual advancement to give you shelter. If you have such a person and you cultivate a relationship with such a person in your life, and that relationship is a cultivation, it's of course Srila Prabhupada was very special. He just met his spiritual master once and he walked out of that place, Ultadanga Road, and he said, I was initiated in that first moment because I accepted him in my heart, although he wasn't initiated till 11 years later. So Prabhupada was very special. He just accepted that person within his heart immediately, and therefore he could achieve unimaginable things by following such a person. So for us, we identify someone like that, and it doesn't have to only be one person, it can be multiple. And then we develop that relationship. We invest in that relationship. We follow the instructions that are given that may not be so lofty that we can follow. And then we develop more faith to follow more challenging instructions. And then it comes to the point where one has full faith. They once asked Prabhupada, what is the most important verse in Vedic literature? And you know, Prabhupada said different things at different times, but at one point he quoted this verse, Yasya deve para bhaktir yatha deve tatha guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Yasya deve para bhaktir, just as one has implicit faith in Krishna, yatha deve tatha guru, if someone has similar faith, implicit faith in the guru, if you have implicit faith in Krishna and guru together, all the imports of Vedic literature are revealed to you. In other words, you see everything Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita as a reality in front of you. It all becomes realization. But to get to that point of faith, it's a journey and it's a relationship and it happens over time. And if one is wise, then one will invest in that relationship. And I'll just read a part of Prabhupada's purport on this, because since you're asking about Guru, maybe we'll end on this point because it's already becoming late. But here Prabhupada says very, very clearly, if I can find it, okay, here we go. Prabhupada quotes this verse that I just quoted, and then he writes, if you want a reference for this, it's 11th chapter 54. This is the importance of a guru. One who has unflinching devotion for the Supreme Lord and is directed by the spiritual master in whom he has similar unflinching faith can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by revelation. One cannot understand Krishna by mental speculation. Okay, now hear what Prabhupada says. For one who does not take personal training under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, it is impossible to even begin to understand Krishna. The word tu is specifically used here to indicate that no other process can be used, can be recommended, or can be successful in understanding Krishna. So, it's an important point, and each of us will do it in our own ways. But basically, in spiritual life, nobody is self-made. There's no such thing as a self-made Vaishnav. I challenge you in the history of the parampara to find a self-made Vaishnav. Every Vaishnav is, every devotee of Krishna is the result of the mercy of another devotee. But it's not stereotyped how we do that in our individual lives. We have to think. But this principle is very powerful, that we need others in our life who can broaden our horizons and give us faith and connect us to Krishna. I hope that helps. I held you long enough. It's 8:40. Thank you so much for your time and attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.
Sulna Swayam Bhagavan Keshav Maharaj ki jai.